Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, I'm Maurice O'Keefe, and you're very welcome to this week's podcast. It's a tribute to Maureen Mullins, who sadly passed away recently. Maureen was a husband and a mother to one of Ireland's successful racing families, and I met Maureen at her home in 2012.
I'm here in Dunninga, in County Kilkenny, and I'm talking to Maureen Mullins, and it's just lovely to be here with you. Can I start by to your own upbringing? Your dad, what was your dad's name?
He Thomas Dorn, he was a farmer. He was very musical.
Yeah.
And he was a marvellous dancer, and he could play all the instruments. I remember coming home from school one time, and I used to play the double bass in school. And the nuns lent me a viola.
Oh, yeah.
And I say he had never seen one before, but he kept it tuned for me all during the holidays. And when I went back to school, I was able to continue with the double bass in the orchestra, because we were getting ready to go to Dublin, the first Kyol. And he also could play the piano,
yeah,
violin, and all the other musical instruments.
That's fascinating. So it was a very musical family then.
He was. He
and
was.
And your dad,
well, none of us were anything like him. We all,
yeah,
played the piano, and I learned the violin as well. But none of them were as good as he was.
And then, can you remember who taught you at school? I mean,
I do. Actually, who taught me the double bass was a sister, Mary Peter, and she was from near Graden Manor. Actually, she was in her 80s, and she lived when she was 96. And she was as clever as any young nun I ever saw. She was so marvellous, the way she used to keep it tuned and show you how to use the strings, and they were very, yeah, hard to keep it in tune.
Were they the presentation sisters?
No, they were the Mercy sisters. And she had two brothers whom I knew well in Graden Manor. They used to hunt in Graden Manor, and their farm is certainly still there, and I knew them well, and it was, she couldn't stop talking about them, of her youth, and the marvellous time she used to have when she was young. But then Paddy's father became involved in the Mount Loftus Harriers with Dr. O'Brien, and they hunted all that Graden Manor country. Gorse Bridge, Mount Loftus was a famous meet, and Graden Manor and Dunninga, Gorse Bridge, and sometimes on the main street in Gorn, at the gates of Gorn Castle.
What about yourself? Did you? What age were you when you first got on a?
Well, I was quite.
Horse?
I was 7 or 8, actually.
Really?
Yeah. 7 or 8 before, but we had mares and foals at home, and we used to hunt with the Mount Loftus Harriers, and I have two sisters who used to go as well. We also rode to Graden Manor to the meets there, and rode back in the evening and the winter evenings, and Gorn, come back from there as well. And I was a couple of times at a meet in Clock. It's just not too far from Kilkenny, but it's a long way from here.
Mm. Michael, and did you go away to boarding school?
Yes, in Arklow. That's where I met this sister, Mary Peter.
Mm.
And I was hopeless at Irish, and so I always had an extra half hour off. from the Irish class, and we'd play the piano or teach them the piano and the violin.
Really? And, and so that's what you did instead of learning Irish?
Instead of learning Irish.
And did you like, I mean, some people don't fit into boarding school. Were you happy being there?
I was, because one evening, just after going there, the nuns were allowed to bring the students out to Lord and Lady Wicklow's garden. And we were looking around them for an hour one evening, or 2 hours. And I saw three lovely ponies in the next field. So, and I was admiring them. And Lady Wicklow said, "It's an awful pity there's nobody here to ride them now." And but she said, "If the nuns allowed you, I would get the pony sent in every Saturday to the convent, and you can have your own little pony club there." And that's what happened while I was there. And they brought in the ponies on a Saturday, and brought them home the evening. And after a while, nearly every child in the school, nearly every child, was interested in some way, either by grooming them or riding them or leading them and helping in a lot of ways. But when I left, that was the end of it.
Before you met Paddy at all, you were working in Dublin.
Yes, well, I knew him before I went to Dublin. Yes, I did. I knew him from the time we were young, because we met him at the Hunt, and we'd be at the Montlathus Harriers. And they were all local, you know, the meets were there.
But what were you doing in Dublin?
Well, I was a secretary to a lovely man called Mr. McNally. He was president, I think, of the Dunleary Yacht Club. And then he was representing an English firm called British Paints. And they used to have a label, red, white and blue. But they had to change that after a couple of years to green, white and gold, because an awful lot of even women going in to buy paint didn't take to this red, white and blue at all. Red, white and blue, is it?
Yeah.
Is the English colours, are they? And
were you there very long?
I was there for about 3 years. But we used to, I remember the first time I ever went to the National, my father bought me a car when I was 16. And I went into Carlow, and I had the red 50, no, the red, it was 10 shillings that time, and it was a red note. And I brought my birth cert with me, and I drove the car in and drove the car back when I was 16. And then in 1947, I must have been about 17 at the time, I drove to Dublin to the airport in the car, and I left it outside. As a lovely house used to be there. I think it was taken down the last couple of years, and a lovely Georgian house. And I left it parked outside the door there, and I left a key under the mat because my sister was working in the bank in Dublin, and she was to pick it up that evening. But when I came back, it was there. And I drove into Dublin. And as I was coming down O'Connell Street, I was stopped by a big Kerry guard. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going home." Well, he said, "What are you doing wrong?" And so I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Now, I'll keep you here," he said, "until you tell me what you were doing wrong." Well, I said, I'm on the wrong side of the road. I'm just driving down on the wrong side of the road, but there aren't any cars on the far side." Well, he said, "It doesn't matter whether there are cars on the far side or not, but keep to your own side of the road." So that was the end of that day, but I had a great day. Cahoo won the National that day, and it was ridden by an Irishman, of course, Eddie Dempsey, and it was the wettest day ever. And they said that he didn't go around the track, the whole track, but you couldn't see anything, only from the last two fences. That's all you could see.
How did you meet yourself
well,
and Paddy?
We used to hunt with the... His father was a joint master of the Mount Loftus Harriers, and I used to hunt with them at Christmas and at Easter, if there was a few days left. And I'd also go to the Kilkenny hunt, and we met there. But I knew him through his sisters before that. Where but he wasn't going out with anybody, and I wasn't really either. Well, we got married in November 1954.
When you came in here, you came to this house, did you?
Yes, where we came to now. This house, yes. It was, used to be belonged to the agent of Dunninga House. And Mrs. Crampton sold it to us. She, from the family, the great family in Dublin, Crampton and Company, they were very successful builders in the middle of the century. Well, middle of the 19th century.
Yeah, and when you came in here, you had to add your own personality to it. And so did you do it up? Or
Well, we didn't. It really is. We just put in electricity. I think that was all. It's just the same house still.
Really?
And we put in
and you reared your family
here. There's an entrance there. Yes. And there were no stables here, actually, only about five stables, and we started adding them on as the money came in, as he was successful at the training.
Yes, but was Paddy, when you married Paddy, was he, he took it over from his father?
Yeah, that year.
Was it that year?
That year, yes.
And so now he was out
on his own, yeah. Yes, very much out on his own. But he could use the gallop, he could use Dunninga for, you know, as the crops used to decide where he could work. I mean, most of the place where the gallop is now, that was used for corn. And, of course, he couldn't go in at the...
Yeah.
At certain times. And then crossing the road, he used the stone park, which is another huge field. But that was always fairly dry, as you can imagine from the name Stone Park.
And when you started rearing your own family then, I mean, did you find that they were taking an interest straight away?
Very big interest, even from the time they were very young. And they knew every horse in the stable. Every horse, especially Tony. He was the one. I remember one day an owner came to see the horse, to see their horse, and they said, "Well, which stable is it in?" And so he said, "Oh yes, it's here," and in the top of the yard. He said, "He's the fellow with the turned in front leg." Well, he was only seven at the time, and the owner's wife told me that. But that horse won several races afterwards. I think seven races, actually. And so there was no doubting that they knew what they were doing,
even from an early stage.
That's right. But I brought them to shows all over Ireland. I remember going to outside Galway, Rathcabin, one Sunday morning to get William qualified for Dublin. And we had to be there at 11 o'clock. And as we let down the back of the box, the announcer said, "Will William Mullins and John Hughes please come to the parade ring?" And so they went up, saddled up, went over and said, "Can we walk the course?" And they said, "No. The fences are all numbered." So they both went round, and both of them qualified for Dublin. Now, William went on to Dublin with a Avenger, but didn't win. But John Hughes did, with two clear rounds. And coming out of the ring, his cap fell off, and he got down to pick it up, and he was disqualified.
Goodness, yeah.
But it was a big lesson for the rest of our children afterwards.
Was discipline a big thing in the family? I mean,
yes, he was very strict.
Paddy was.
Yes, he was. But we used to get off every week to one or two places to show jump: Tipperary, Clare, Clonmel, Wexford. We went all over the country for show jumping, and we used to have a great time. And he would rarely come.
Yeah, I mean, that was another aspect of it as well. I mean, you had the training the horses here, and then to find time to get involved in the show jumping. Did that lead to equestrian sport? Or, I mean, did any of your sons get involved in...
They didn't get involved in anything else, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
The three trainers. Yes. Sandra trained for herself.
Yeah.
And... I don't know. But it was marvellous that time. And it was a very good thing to be in. But then we had brood mares from the very start. And because we bought... Well, from the very start, we had brood mares, but there weren't anything that you'd write home about. They didn't win the Grand National or anything like that. But we bought three cheap mares for William to ride when he left, when he came back from school in Roscrea. He was there with Tony and George. But we bought those cheap mares for them, for William to ride, because Paddy felt he couldn't ask owners who were paying, you know, fees for a horse to be trained by somebody who was only 17. And how would they, you know, like that? So eventually he bought these three mares, but I know one of them was Regal Star, and he won on her. And she eventually bred the Lincoln winner, Girl in Blue. And another one was Parage Attack. And every animal she bred won, which I think is a record in itself.
The mares, they were brought to what stable? Can you remember the...
Well, we didn't bring them to any stable. We kept them here. All the mares were kept here. I think we've had... over 100 winners, and none of them were ever foaled anywhere except in Dunninge, until about a fortnight or 3 weeks ago. I had a mare called Not Broke Yet, and she was well overdue, and I sent her over to Victor Connolly at the Burgage Stud, and that was the first time that any mare was born outside of Dunninge. And we had well over 100 winners. I'll list them for you sometime.
Oh, yes.
Sometime.
But listen, let's go back to the Mullins empire, you know, because it is an empire now. It has been built up over the years.
That's true. But his Paddy's grandfather, James Mullins, from Great Amana, was on the original committee of Gorn Park in 1916, and he must have been a marvellous man to have the nerve to go on the committee of a racecourse when the country was in turmoil, you know.
Yes.
The black and tans all over the place and houses being burned. Dunninge wasn't, they were very lucky that it wasn't, and he eventually bought Dunninge, that man from Great Amana, and they moved in Christmas 1922.
My, and so that's when it all kind of started.
That's where it all started. But they were, the family hunted, and the father and the grandfather, they all hunted. It was a way of life. I mean, now they're going to matches. All the youngsters are going to matches. Kilkenny team, watching the Kilkenny hurling team, and watching the rugby team, and the local teams, and all the rest of it.
Yeah. But But I would imagine that, you know, it was passed then from father to son. So it fell into Paddy's lap. I mean, it was there for him.
Yes, but he made use of it. And just as William is making use of his teaching from his father. That's what he says anyway. I see him quoted in the paper.
When you were here, did you take an active part yourself in the running of the
Yes, place? Well, I did all the broodmare mating, and I brought them to the studs. And I remember going with the dam of Hurry Harriet up to Newbridge, and I went on my own up to the sire, which was Yerra Junior, which means Harry spelt backwards. And I went back next day, and she only had one service, and the result was Hurry Harriet, who won the Champion Stakes in 73. And they also went with Regal Star, and she bred Girl in Blue, that won the Lincoln. And most of the time, because he was very busy with, you know, can imagine, with all the horses and training. Although we never had more than 45 horses in training, but we'd always have two or three yearlings, three or four, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, four-year-olds. We'd have.
And were they owned by the family?
Or? Yes, all owned by.
Okay, and
yes.
there was no other person's horse that was trained here. I mean, did.
There were lots of. We had very good owners, marvellous owners.
Who were the owners who actually left their horses here for training?
Well, in training they were all left here because there was no horse boxes or anything like that then, no gallops anywhere. The most successful one was that came to us was Mr. Hall there from Newtonbury House. They still have a stud there. And the first two runners he sent to us, they were fourth in the Derby at the Curragh, which was a great achievement. And then we had Lady Byng, had Council Cottage, which was one of our first winners at Cheltenham. And she sent all her horses here, Volcott and Volcott, Nescott, and Painter's Cottage, there's a lot of them. And then, I'm just trying to think of the big winners. Mr. Nicholson had Vulpine that won the Grand National. He was he was sold to an English owner to go to training with Mr. Draper, and he'd failed the vet. They said he was wrong of his wind. But then he came here. That happened as a three-year-old, and he came here to be trained. And he won a point-to-point up in the Midlands, and I'm sure it was ridden by Helen Bryce Smith, who was a very successful lady rider that time. And her mother and father used to train up there in Clonmellon. And he was a four-year-old winning the point-to-point. He won the Power Gold Cup at five, and he won the National at six.
My goodness, yeah.
And then we had another horse that we got from Georgie Wells. Mrs. Wilson had a disagreement with him, and he came here because she came to live near us at the same time. And he was a very, fairly big horse, but he was the thinnest horse you've ever seen, and a very narrow girth, and never looked as if he had been fed.
Yes.
But he also won the Independent Cup, and the following year he won the National. I think he was six when he won the National. And then he went on and he won the Totalisator, which is now the Supreme novices or something at Cheltenham. He won the total Eseter by 8 or 10 lengths, ridden by John Crowley.
And would there be a great rivalry then between all the different... You spoke about...
owners.
Owners, and I mean, and not just the owners, but the trainers. I mean, to get the business, you know, was there a great...
We didn't know, but I'm sure there was rivalry, but nothing like now, nothing like now. I would say that a lot of the people that owned the horses were local. Major Lambert, he had a lovely filly here called Black Outlook. And then Colonel Palmer he was local as well. And he had a lovely, successful filly too called Handball. And all the local people that were breeding horses, and the Brennans of Upper Grange, they had, they're quite near, you see, and they had the winner of the Galway Hurdle.
Yeah.
And Luke had the winner of the Galway Hurdle, Luke yes, Mullins. <yeah.
laughs> But I suppose... you know, kind of the organisation and putting everything together, because I do know that Cheltenham is always a big part of the
yes,
year for you, for the Mullinses.
Right. Yes.
So was it always that way? Was Cheltenham something that
Yes, it was. But you wouldn't bring anything unless it was good enough. First runner we ever had was 1965. It was ridden by Francis Flood in that 4 mile race. He finished fifth, and I think there were 37 runners in that race. I'm sure there were 35 or 36 runners. And that was the first runner we had. And then we went back with Council Cottage and Herringall. And Herringall went to France then after that. And he ran in the Grand Steep, which was run yesterday in Otay. And he fell in the Grand Steep on the Sunday. But Stan Meller went back to ride him on the Wednesday in the Prix de Trag, and he won that very easily. Now, Stan Meller tells me it was his biggest winner ever.
Yeah. Well, of course, all this couldn't happen either without a good jockey. So who were the jockeys
Matt
rode
Kern,
for the stable?
Came to work here when he was about 16, and he was the... rode several of the... Well, he rode a couple of Grand National winners.
Was he a local lad?
Yes, he was a local lad. His father was a jockey. Kind of before the war sort of thing. But he was excellent. And then another chap was Michael Brennan from Gorse Bridge. But nobody belonged to him, had ever been in horses. And he rode a lot of the winners. And John Crowley rode Herringall. And... there was no... The stable jockey was Matt Kern, and Mickey Brennan then did the... He won the, you know, that race down in Listowel. They won that 4 years running, I think, with Mick McQuaid and those horses, Mr. Hall there. But they were all the riders you had that time. There was no sort of a real good jockey that time. Now you can...
Was it the intention of Paddy and his father to keep it local, to give what they could locally?
With employment, it was certainly local. Certainly local, and none of the people that worked with Paddy, except one, you can see him in the photograph where he was leading in Flash Parade in 1954, wasn't it? He was local, and he was a very good horseman. But he just, anything he knew, he learned it here. He hadn't been employed with anybody.
Yeah.
His father was the gardener in Deninge, and he was superb.
Yeah.
And they used to live in Tom's Lodge now. He used to live there. And his brother was also working with the horses in Deninge, and he went on to get a very successful job with the Vigers and at Burgage Stud. He died actually a couple of weeks ago, and there's an account of it in the Field.
Could you talk to me about the the responsibilities, and there must be lots of responsibilities when the business is so large, you know, in keeping it all together and ensuring that you know, the horses would turn up at the meets and so on. It must be running the organization.
Yes, but he was absolutely marvelous at being there on time. If it were ever late, it was my fault.
Why was that?
Well, that is true, and I think William has picked it up too. He's never in time for anything, but he was never rushing. Nobody ever saw him rushing or being in a hurry. But he was always at the races, and he knew the times that you had to be there at the races. He knew the time they were to walk out of the ring, and no matter who he met or spoke to, he knew the time the jockey should be out. And he always liked to have the horses in the ring a few minutes well before any other trainer would bring them in. And then he'd be delighted to speak to the jockey. Now, he didn't say very much, the jockey. The most I think I ever heard him saying was to Frankie Dettori, the day that he won in 03, he won the Oaks with Vintage Tipple. You see, Frankie was looking up at him for, I'd say, 5 minutes, wondering why he was when he was going to say all the directions he was to get. And he just said before he got up, "I know she stays." And that was all he said, because I was there. "I know she stays." And that is what she did. And that was 03. I mean, so he was, must have been 80-something, 85 at the time.
Well, what's a normal day here?
Well, he wouldn't ride out. The horses wouldn't go out until about 8 o'clock. But he'd have at least 10 or 11 people to ride out. But there wouldn't be anything like jockeys, you know, qualified jockeys or anything like that. But the gallop here, even before we got the all-weather in 1980, it was sort of enclosed. And if they could stay on the animal going round and round, they wouldn't ever, you know, they wouldn't sort of run away. And he used to work a lot up in the place where the gallop is now. And to start to go around, and even if they, we had a huge horse one time called Lock Diamond, and nobody would hold him. But if he got on the, started running away, he would say to them, "Keep with them, and they'll eventually pull up and come back to the other horses." So we had very few accidents, really? Touch wood.
Yeah. In fact, it all seemed to run very smoothly. Was there any
dips
in the over the decades?
I can't remember any now. I can't remember. I just can't remember. Maybe if I looked at his book, yeah. I might.
Was
see.
Paddy a gambling man?
No. He was not a gambling man, but I was always having doubles on the tote and singles and, what do you call them, forecasts and exactas and combination exactas. And I had a very successful time. But now I can't back a winner. If I back Patrick or William, that's the day that they were second or third.
So you decide not to then?
Well, not very much anyway, not very much.
But what are your views then? I mean, there is so much money involved in the sport. So, you know, the whole gambling thing. I mean,
well, he didn't gamble. He didn't gamble at all. But I would say that what he was his forte, he always had horses at their peak to win certain big races, like 4 Galway hurdles, 4 or 5 nationals, and winners at Cheltenham, and being leading trainer for 10 years in succession. And I think he was leading trainer 5 other years as well. But that time they went on the number of winners, not on the money won. And if he sold a horse or any animals that he sold, that we sold, belonged to ourselves, the money was put back into the training.
Was it?
Yes, improving things. For instance, he was the first person that had the nuts that were made by Connolly's. We were in America one time and we met people called the Knuckles Brothers. And they were telling him that, you know, the days of oats and that sort of thing was gone. So they gave him the prescription, is it, or the, for the nuts. And we brought it back to Connolly's. And there were two horses we decided that were guinea pigs. Devonish Artus belonged to my brother, and he was one, and Vulpine was the other. They were very, they weren't great to feed, you know, to eat. And then they got the nuts made up in Connolly's, and these two horses turned inside out. And from then on...
So the feed is very important.
Oh, it's very important. Yeah. But being in County Kilkenny, we have, there's enough of the land, you see, is very good for horses.
Yes, yeah. Of course.
Yes, yeah. It's a pity that there are not more people into it in Kilkenny.
Mm. That's right, because you certainly have
the limestone.
The limestone here in the county.
Yes, and just across the river, you have the beautiful granite. See the beautiful houses that are all over the place. Well, there are no granite houses around here. They're all limestone or the made up stone, what is it?
Yeah. And that underfoot then is ideal.
Well, the
for
water
the horse.
Must be very important.
Yeah. Of course.
You must have the limestone water. And I mean, it's good for everybody. Their teeth and bone and everything. It's an advantage.
Of course.
Maybe that's why the Kilkenny team are running away with all the...
But you have a terrific recall. I mean, it's extraordinary, your recall of horses, dates, times, where they're raced, how successful they were, and was that something you pride yourself?
I don't know whether if you asked me to say my prayers that I could recall them.
Yeah.
Which is important too. We mustn't lose sight of that, no matter what happens.
But the naming the horses, I mean, that in itself must be a challenge.
Well, he was marvellous, and he named all the horses. The only one he didn't name was a horse called Raining. And I decided I'd name that. And one day we were in Tralee, and Raining was out in front, and he won. And remember Mihal O'Hare, who was a marvellous person for racing and games. He was the most successful ambassador for everything, Mihal O'Hare. And he kept on saying, and it was a very sunny day, and Raining is out in front, and it's still raining coming to the last fence. So I said, I'll never name another one.
Was family very important to Paddy?
Very.
And to you?
He was always thinking about improving them and making sure that they behaved well. And of course he didn't mind people drinking and everything, but he hated to see youngsters going over the top, if you know what I mean. And he was determined that they wouldn't. I know that they enjoy themselves. Of course they enjoy themselves.
How many children altogether did you rear?
5. Sandra was the eldest girl, and then 4 boys.
And they're all involved?
In horses, yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's 3 of them training. And George is in horse transport. And Sandra has does a lot of breeding, but she mostly has flat horses.
And so did the discipline of sport, the, you know, the flat and the hurls and the... was it mixed? I mean,
I mean, even that race that he won in the Curragh that day with Vintage Tipple, the Oaks, I mean, within a week he won the Galway Plate.
Yeah.
So that's such a contrast. And three of the horses that he, the mares that we bought, the cheap mares for William to ride in, one of them bred the Lincoln winner.
Yeah.
And the other one bred the Cambridgeshire winner.
My goodness.
So they were, and I think the Lincoln, that Girl in Blue won, there were about 28 runners that day.
Are you still involved yourself as ever?
Well, Thomas training now, and I see the horses every day, the horses going out to work every day. But, and I know when they're running and what they're going for and that sort of thing, but I prefer the breeding a lot now. I was always interested in it from the very beginning, but it's very interesting. You will see if you ever buy a brood mare how interesting it is, and seeing the progeny. Helen, my daughter-in-law now, has a lot of, she and Tom have a lot of mares, and they were lucky that the week they had such a good week at Punchestown, they had three colt foals, two by Stowaway and the other by Orontario. So they're keeping on that, and you see the mares every day,
yeah,
and every morning.
My goodness,
and,
yeah.
Feeding them all the
but
time.
It keeps you active and...
occupied, and of course it does. Yeah. Yes, of course it does.
And do you still have the hand, you know, the command? I mean, do you still hold the reins?
Well, I know the lads that work here are marvellous, especially the fellows that were here, and they know the routine, and it's marvellous to see them,
yeah,
because they know it much better than I do.
Yeah.
They know the routine.
Maureen Mullins, I am absolutely thrilled that I came down here to meet you this morning, and thank you for talking to me.
And thank you for coming.
Yeah. Thank you. You've been listening to the late Maureen Mullins. My name is Maurice O'Keefe, and I look forward to bringing you another podcast next week.